Horses with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website, stevebick.com. just listening to the return in the headset, and I realized a little cold for those that don't follow on Twitter. That old commercial, you got kids, you got germs. I called it the grandchild flu. It's amazing that you got these grandchildren. They're, at the daycare, which is basically, it's basically an incubator. It's like it's like those labs in the science fiction movies. How are they impervious to it, and yet it can fell adults, take you out at the knees? It's funny because I can always tell. I can always tell when I'm getting sick, and I get achy first, and I'll sneeze or cough a couple times. That's exactly what Monday afternoon after I got off the air, started to feel a little off, and then sure enough, it went from there to. Particularly the throat. I told Tina, I said Monday night, I said, I'm sick. I said, I'm getting sick. And she scoffs at me, which is, of course, how we almost lost an eye, how we almost got claimed by the same heart ailment that felled John Ritter. right? Who's out there? Husbands, raise your hand. We complain so much. I guess there's two different schools of this, right? There's the stoic husband that says nothing, and then there's us, complaining about every ache and every little ailment. So my throat was bad, and I felt okay otherwise, pretty much yesterday. But I wasn't going to be able to get through. 3 hours of vocal gymnastics. So, so I thought, all right, let's, and that, it was the right move. So, but I'm just listening. I can hear my, I'm not crazy about it. This is very funny because this is going to get into the Waze taping, the Waze recording that a lot of people, I guess, have downloaded. I did it in jest on Sunday you could download the Waze instructions that I taped, and there's a funny aside to that, but I'm listening to I can hear myself, and I got that FM DJ sound tonight on or Symphony Sit, right? to the Waze topic for 2 seconds, Aaron Yagoda, who, I talk about all the time. You get to know Aaron because he's shy about coming on the radio. So I just tell you all the Aaron Yagoda stories. Aaron downloaded it, and he wrote me a note yesterday that was very funny because he said, there's a problem with the Waze recording. if you are driving during the show, and, when you're normally, let's say you're listening to this show, right? And I'm talking to a guest, or I'm talking to you like I'm talking now, and you have Waze, and you have whatever voice you're using, they got all kinds of fun things. And it comes on and tells you, in a quarter mile, bear right. Well, if you, Aaron says, if you're using my voice and you're listening to the show, if my voice comes up with the instruction, it it's almost like confusing. And so there's certain things that I could say on the air, just in the course of conversation, that would confuse compared to the instructions about which way you're supposed to turn. And so Aaron made these suggestions. Please avoid right, turn, and stop in the course of radio show conversation. And so we're going to use correct actual running distance and quit. No more, because if I say right, turn, or stop live, it's going to confuse you if you're listening to me give you the instructions driving. It made me laugh. I got the biggest kid. Aaron is a panic. He is so funny. Unbelievable. But I guess a lot of people have downloaded it, and it's kind of fun. Tina, it's funny. Tina, I put it on Tina's phone, unbeknownst to her. And so when it started up and she was going somewhere with the instructions, at first she got a big kick out of it. Now she's annoyed. She's annoyed because she's like, I can't get away from you. She goes in the car, goes to Albany to get her nails done, and I'm barking instructions at her. Left, left! I guess yesterday, a lot of people really enjoyed, that hadn't heard, Mary Perdue from last week talking Landalusi, or Lenny at the sale, at the Keeneland sale, talking about the book he wrote with Paul Volpone, Phyllis George. And I heard from a bunch of people that hadn't heard those conversations. And so that's one of the benefits. And it occurred to me to run Mary's piece again, because it took a day or two to get her, if you didn't listen live and you wanted to listen, it took, I think, 2 days to get the audio up. So I thought, let's run Mary. And then once I thought of that, I said, let's get another book up, and Lenny's book with Paul Volpone. That was a fun conversation with Lenny at the sale. So that was that Andy Beyer visit at Saratoga, the 50th anniversary, unbelievable, 50th anniversary of Secretariat's hopeful. So that was good. I thought that was a fun, the best ofs. They're fun. A few things still to clean up from the weekend. We got a couple more little recaps, and I certainly enjoyed Monday's second half in terms of introducing people that have not been on the show before, most notably Chassis Pommier and John Shark Hanlon, who is the toast of the British Isles and certainly of Ireland. And he's done a ton of media. He was on with Nick Luck, and if you missed it, that was a case, by the way, that was my mistake on the labeling. John Hanlon was in hour two. I thought that we started hour three. John Hanlon is in hour two on the podcast and on the archive. So if you're looking for the John Hanlon, and I made the listing correction yesterday evening. I thought to myself, after the more I thought about it, the more I kind of realized I went right to Hanlon as soon as we were done with Chassis. So if you're looking for Shark Hanlon and a really warm and emotional, I said specifically when I brought it up about poor Jack de Bromhead and the fatality, the pony fatality in September. And if you, I hope you saw the picture that I put up of that Todd Marks, Todd does all the chase photography work, and he's got a picture that absolutely, I mean, I'm sure Todd has got a season full. He does all the work for thisishorseracing.com and of course, and the Saratoga special. That picture that he has of Hanlon with his arm around his son, Patty, and with Uick, you know, I guess without context, without a, you know, without a tagline, a caption, I mean, you can tell that there, you can tell it's emotional, and Patty is in tears, and it's a really evocative photo. I imagine the Todd will put it in as a, as an Eclipse candidate, I would think. So at least that was, that's, you know, my, that was my impression looking at it. And so I put that out there on the listing, and it was on the, yeah, on the, it's at Facebook, it's at Twitter. I even put it up at Derby Trail, actually. Got to get to, speaking of the results from the afternoon at Far Hills, I mentioned, I think, in passing Monday, they had very good handle. They were very pleased with the handle numbers, and that should only continue to increase. And they didn't even have the biggest sets of fields. The fields were solid enough, but, you know, with more candidates, it would fill out even more in terms of the multis and so forth. But they were very pleased, 600 and change. The couple of the results I wanted to get to, and actually we should probably reach for Sean, because I want to, first of all, I want to congratulate River D, Sean Clancy, and his partners. They won that nightcap, the maiden race, with Cool Jet, an Irish bred, a jet away, and great way to end the afternoon. This is second North American try after a start earlier in October, and ran very well, actually, in that race. But I'm sure if the way this worked out, Sean prefers, and the partners prefer winning it at Far Hills. Not to mention, the purse was an extra $15,000. The other stake action, Agitare, that Forbes we mentioned a little bit, Kerry Brian, and $39 mutual under Bernie Dalton. Redisian for Leslie Young, for owner Sharon Shepard, the Chevrolet Park Medician, 8-year-old, a romping winner of the Appleton, and in the Foxbrook, Gordon Elliott came and won two, back-to-back, actually. Won the Gladstone, and an easy, even money winner, the Insider in the Gladstone, and then Ted Hastings came back for owner Aiden Ryan, 6-year-old Imperial Monarch, gelding for Elliott, in an exciting win over Mr. Naylor's How Ya Bud, that had run in the Entenmann. So those were the other stakes, and the opening the opener was the Harry Harris Leger, Champs-Élysées, 4-year-old for Kerry Brian and Belle Meade, and the International Venture. So that was the rest of the results that we hadn't met. I know we had maybe touched on a couple of them. A few other results from just the last couple of days. Let me get these in before I touch on news. On Monday, we had told you about the Futurity when we talked to Naja Thompson. And I told you that Andiamo Firenze did not have to win that race and got bet like nuts, down to 1-2, which was silly, because Stonewall Star and Acoustic Avenue were absolutely right there. And in fact, it was Acoustic Avenue who went off the longest price of the three, which I very strange, actually, paid $8.30, and Acoustic Avenue had, you know, had the win over the track, had come and won the aspirant. So now 3-for-4 is Acoustic Avenue. This is a McLean's Music, and in fact, I'll probably touch on this with Sid. This is for the Reeves, Dean and Patty, and a Broman bred McLean's Music colt that was a $200,000 OBS purchase back in April. As I said, now 3 for 4, and the only blemish, the loss in the funny side in the second career start. It broke the maiden pretty early in the Saratoga meet. Then the funny side try went third, which Andiamo Afarense won, but then went to Finger Lakes and won the aspirant. So actually really filled the coffers. The $95,000 purse here, or winner's share. So this one's up to almost $250,000 in earnings. So it's paid for itself in its first, 5-6 months. Pretty nice. And the Reeves, I saw where Dean went back and bought another McLean's Music weanling at the sale. Just so happened. That caught my eye on Monday afternoon. So Acoustic Avenue, Manny Franco. And it was a good race. I mean, Andiamo took over pretty early, and Acoustic sparred and ultimately prevailed, and Stonewall Star was not far back and was part of the picture, but the top pair, the chart, it's a length, but Acoustic Avenue, and you got paid all right. There were two stakes that we would have gotten to yesterday at Parks, as they continue this kind of weekly series, and Barron for Butchie Reed. I actually owe Butchie a call. Has won a handful of stakes, going even back to Pennsylvania Derby Day, and Barron. This is some nice horse. Barron has now himself at 700,000, just under 700,000 in earnings. And how old is he now? He's four. I mean, there's plenty to happen here yet for this nice PA bred. And he's, he's good in open company. Won the DeFrancis. In fact, I don't even know if we didn't even talk to Butchie after the DeFrancis. St. Omer's Farm and Chris Feferic. Ninth career win in 21 starts for the Wagelia Colt. Frankie Pennington, his regular rider, and one clear, was favored. We still got 540 out of it. And by Landon C., who I get a big kick out of, Joe and Beezy, and Joe's moved this Cairo Prince 5-year-old around a little bit, coming off the Alphabet Soup win on the nightcap, you'll recall, at even money. You got, if you're a Byland and C fan, you got 15-20 yesterday. I don't know why. Not sure why he was, that long a price. He was the fourth choice, 13-2, basically. And they made Farmo Power the favorite off the Parks Dirt Mile win that ended up being, remember, he was dropped down. The Mind Control was put up in that. But made him the favorite, a little under 2-1, riding with Biden, who also had come off, was coming off the win, that in the Greenwood Cup. So he had all kinds of undercard success stories from the Pennsylvania Derby Cotillion Day in this spot. This was the Mike Bellezzi. Last week, the Dabunda. And this week, the Bellezzi. And Byland and C, 15-20, with Mikhail Sanchez, who was the subject of plenty of consternation and ridicule after a... It's actually a weird... It's kind of a weird circumstance where his horse kind of comes off the rail early and banged around a hatful kind of... set kind of a chain reaction. I'm going to send Tony the tape. We'll see what Tony's thoughts are tomorrow. I wanted to get Tony's take on it because it I know everybody was beating up on Sanchez, whose faculties have been called into question after his crazy and idiotic and embarrassing betting circumstance that got him a suspension. But you know, when confined to the afternoon and, you know, the riding, he's pretty competent jock. So it felt like the horse kind of got out on him. I don't know. I want to get Tony Stake. I can't. It wasn't like he did anything. It didn't look like he was doing anything that was intentional in terms of, you know, setting off a series of hip checks that affected. And there was no, you know, there was no change. There was no, there, I don't even think there was there even a, I don't even know if there was an inquiry. So, by the way, regarding Chassis and her win, in the Magnolia, or not the Magnolia, it was the week before, in the Jewel, I didn't mention the other winner, late September, for Jose Camejo and owner Kevin Stedman, a Coteau Grove Munnings colt that went off just favored in the Legacy. This was the one that went over to run in the Coventry. So, second win. Broke the maiden in May at Churchill. So I wanted to get that in. So that's all the, I think that's all the, did we get it? Was there any other stakes action we didn't get to? I think that was it. Did I mention the other day, I don't think we mentioned the, if it's in this pile, that means I didn't get to it. The Ontario Fashion, the grade three, Hazelbrook, who you know I've got a little bit of affection for, Hazelbrook, who we bet at 8-1 in the Seaway, only to get beat by Lady Shakespeare. Hazelbrook 1-2 winner of the Fashion for Lauren Richards. Saturday at Woodbine, and I've got to go back and look at the couple of maiden winners. Josie Carroll had a maiden winner, a first time starter that beat a bunch of horses with experience, named A Game, a Distorted Humor. Of Mark Dodson's A Game, Ontario bred filly. This was an off the turf event, and there was a 2-year-old maiden race too that Kevin Attard for our friends the Old Wellings, a collected filly, collect dat, that won second time out. Collect dat. It's out of Dat Echo, actually, that Anderson Farms bred. They bought this at the Canadian yearling sale for $87,000. Collect that. I've got to look at the figures. All right, so that I can. There's nothing more satisfying around this desk than clearing off piles of PPs. Yeah, we got the Queen Elizabeth in. We got the Franklin and. Graham, who had a huge, just what a week for Graham Motion, and you were all in on it on the ground floor, right? Shug, we talked about, yep, Clement, Lady Edith, all right. So I'm going to declare last week almost finished. The Rocky Run at Delaware, service with Tuskegee Airmen with Paco aboard, and in the White Clay Creek, Alma Rosa. Another sharp Azteca winner. And California, do we get California? The Distaff, Eddie's New Dream, Square Eddie for Ben Cecil with Mario Gutierrez, and Chosen Vron for Cruel Jack and the California Flag. Ravelli, the Pizza Man stake. Richie got Game with Jareth Loveberry. So, all right. Keeneland today, we'll slip that in. I'm sure we'll talk Keeneland, kind of a meat and potatoes Keeneland card, you know, starts out on the cheaper side and then gains momentum midway. You got an early action, some claimers, a couple of maiden claimers, then a couple of straight claimers, and it moves into allowance and maiden special territory. Late pick four looks very attractive. So we'll probably go over that with Seth. I think Andy's going to join us on he was up at Saratoga. Doing stuff with doing a variety of things with his mom, which is nice. So we'll get Andy on the train, I think, and Alan Foreman. Good chance that Alan joins us. Actually, you know what you should do, Case? Let's get Dick Powell in so I can get Alan. Alan's open till 10:30. So let's get Dick Powell going, and we'll do some HKJC. I don't know if you've been watching Happy Valley. I kind of was interested in the third race earlier this morning, about an hour ago, and the favorite, I probably should save this for Dick, the favorite, Gold Baby, looked absolutely hopelessly beaten on the turn and somehow got up, came absolutely flying to get up. And I had just pulled up a little form to win and just took a shot and was trying to beat the favorite, and that was unsuccessful because the favorite come a running and beat us. So when we talk to Alan, let me just introduce the news portion. We've got some from Monday afternoon after we got off the air. Heisa naming their advisory panel that they promised for horsemen, and they put together a mammoth 19-person advisory group, which feels a little cumbersome, but I until we hear how it's going to work and some of the specifics. But you know many of the participants. In fact, I imagine most of you know all of the participants. Mark Cassie included among the trainers. Kelsey Danner, who's been on an absolute tear, and we got to get to Kelsey. Tommy Drury, which is nice that somebody, you know, Tommy's size gets included. Donnie K. Von Hemel, Tim Keefe, of course, from Maryland. Ron Moquette, a outstanding addition to this, and somebody that, you know, who doesn't necessarily align completely with the, let's call them, the ambitions of Heisa. So that's good to see somebody like Ron included. Graham Motion, who is a terrific addition, and Shaz. And it's funny because, I mean, this literally came out like 45 minutes after Shaz was with us. So Rick Schatzberg included, and Linda Gaudette. You know, these are all outstanding horsemen, and also notably horsemen like Tim Keefe, who's heavily involved in the Maryland Trainers Association. So, you know, people that have their, you know, have their finger on the pulse of the concerns of horsemen. So that, from that standpoint, that's a very august group. Then on the owners and breeders side, Rick Gold and Fred Hertrick, David Engordo, Frank Jones, who you know, of course, from his long association with Dale Romans, Maggie Moss, who, of course, is very much tied into aftercare, and Kirk Wyckoff, who is a terrific addition as well. And I know some people were saying, well, what about horse players? Well, you know, certainly Kirk can speak up on that front for players. Two veterinarians added, Sarah Langsam and John Piewitz, and farrier Tom Trosen. Tom Robbins, the ubiquitous Tom Robbins from Del Mar, as a racing office representative. So there's the 19, panel of 19, and how they're going to interface with the workings of Heisa, I guess, is to be determined. And we'll also talk with Alan about a couple of other machinations involving personnel. Dr. Scholey, who, of course, has been involved with RMTC these last several years, and also, of course, in roles with Stronic Group, etc. She's going to be the chief science officer, and I know some people found that title quizzical, but that triggered also a couple of other moves, because that, of course, necessitated a new head for our MTC. So we'll let Alan touch on that. And they also brought in Dr. Hester, the orthopedic surgeon, as the national medical director, focusing on jockey health and welfare. So a bunch of things. They're trying to build, you know, build an infrastructure. We've also got to talk H-2B visas, and I'll reach out for. Actually, Alan could probably touch on that, but I was going to also reach out for Tom Rooney. There's a new communication vehicle that NTRA has launched as well, a newsletter kind of thing. And so maybe Tom can join us, not today, but maybe reach out for Tom for tomorrow. Right now, Dick Powell is standing by. And Dick, I don't know about you, but I thought I was going to be okay until Gold Baby came running in that third race.
Not only did he come running, but he got interfered with 100 meters out. He got slammed from both sides.
Yeah, jostled around.
And he just had so much momentum, it didn't matter. He just, like, flicked them out of the way. Got up in time, and I thought the track announcer was great because his call was like, I can't believe what I'm saying. And sure enough, he won the photo, and wow, that was remarkable.
Yeah, I on the turn. In fact, you mentioned the race call on the turn. He pointed out that Gold Baby was a chicken in a pot, and then all of a sudden, I was like, hey. And it's funny because at first he was kind of questioning whether Gold Baby got up, and I said, there's no question he got up. You could tell. I could tell live. There was no way.
Well, he had a funny call in the next race where there's a horse on the lead and he opened up five, but he's just an habitual, I hate to call him a quitter, but he just doesn't finish his races well. So the announcer said, and so-and-so is ahead by four, but don't go to the window yet. And sure enough, he got caught. So he was having some fun, which is great to see.
Well, and Dick, first of all, nice job last week. Basically, doubled their money. Those that played along, and better to cash than trash. And we got about 12 minutes to this sixth race, so let's get a late pick three. Let's get that done first, and then we can look at what went on last week.
Okay, race six coming up. First leg of the pick three. We're going to go 1,200 meters, class three. I'm going to go three deep in here. The favorite is number six, Excellent Piers. I'm just running extremely well. Matthew Chadwick rides back, draws the rail. Hopefully he doesn't get, you know, too much traffic from down there, but he's a must-use horse. I threw in number eight, Starfire Gems, who's coming in from Australia, and new trainer Jamie Richards, who was New Zealand's leading trainer, now training in Hong Kong, getting going, seems to be doing well, gets Zach Purton. Zach already has two wins today. Gets Zach Purton to ride, so Starfire Gems makes its Hong Kong debut. That's number eight. And I'm going to throw in number three, Igniting, Francis Loy and Matthew Poon. Good second, two back in its first start of the year, then came back with a third, and just should be right there in the money, draws post two. Hopefully we get a trip. So first leg, three, six, and eight. Second leg, we're going to go two turns, class three. And I went mostly with the lightweights in here. I went with number eight, Loyal Baby. Matthew Chadwick, horse had a horrible trip last time out, but was from post 12. Today draws post 7, so I can excuse that. Starts before that were very good, including its seasonal debut where he ran third at Happy Valley going this distance. Number 10 is the early favorite in the betting. I wrote down the betting odds about an hour ago. Storm Legend, Casper Fans, Harry Bentley, they were right there, turning for home, two back, and then rallied for second last time out. So we're going to use him. And then we're going to use number 11, Super Mission. Draws the rail, gets in light. A rider, Wagner Borges, doesn't get a lot of parimutuel attention, but does a terrific job. So we'll throw him in, and he's getting in with 119 pounds. So 8, 10, and 11 in the second leg. Now, the third leg is where it gets real interesting, because you have an undefeated horse, number one, Flying Ace. This is a class 3 going 1,200 meters. Flying Ace was 4-for-4 last year. Last start was March, so this is quite a long layoff for this horse. Comes from behind, finishes strong. But one thing that intrigued me, Steve, was when he won his last race, his rating was 73, and he won it, and he's only a 78 now. Now, they have to move the horse up 5 rating points off a win. But we've seen good horses like California Spangle and Romantic Warrior, you know, move way up off a win. So they weren't that impressed. The track handicapper wasn't that impressed. So I've decided that Flying Ace is beatable. He was about a 3-to-1 favorite in the early betting. I don't know where he's going to be now. So I am going to single number 2, Drops of God. John Size, Zach Purton, they've already combined for 4 wins this year. Has had 3 starts already. So gets a major fitness edge. A recency edge, was a good second to Dak, and then was an even fourth last time when blocked in the stretch. Draws post 2. Zach's obviously on fire, doing everything right. So I think he can pull off the, not a big upset, because I don't know how much Flying Ace is going to get bet. The only betting wasn't that much different than the 2. But I'm going to single Drops of God in this race. So we'll go 3, 6, 8, with 8, 10, 11, with 2.
Very good. All right.
And then last week, the real value was in the exactas. One of those races, my top 3 picks had a $185 exacta. Another one had a nice exacta. So the pick 3 just worked out because the logical horses all did our job, but we had some nice horses in second that didn't help us in the pick 3, but helped us in the other gimmick. So it was the races went the way we were hoping they would go.
Well, and you know, you had the foresight to hit it twice, right? I mean, you doubled down on it.
Yes.
Very good. So run it.
Yeah, it was good, and then we. And then we ran 1-2 in the last leg, so you get that consolation.
Conso, right.
And sometimes when, you know, this one wasn't a price, but sometimes when that second horse is a price, the consolation's pretty good. So, yeah, that'll work. Hopefully we can beat this favorite in the last leg. Hopefully the favorite takes a lot of money and the 2 can overcome him, although the way Zach Purton's riding, he's getting bet no matter who he's on.
So one more time for everybody, Dick. 3, 6, 8.
3, 6, 8 with 8, 10, 11 with 2.
There you go. So 9, the multiple of 9, and people want to add or hammer it, go ahead. Go right ahead. We are, let's see, we're now 6 minutes to post for the Longines Cup. Happy Valley action on this Wednesday morning, and looking at the ones that Dick's using, Igniting is 8-to-1 currently, and Excellent Peers is your 6-to-5 favorite, and then Starfire Gems 7-to-2. So it'd be nice to get Matthew Poon and the Star Spangled Banner gelding Igniting around. They're showing right now. Actually, they're showing Excellent Peers in the walking ring. Oh, we're going. How far, Dick? 6? Yeah, 3/4.
12,
Dick,
12,
you know what?
Yeah,
instead of recapping Saturday right this second, let's take a couple of minutes. I'd love to get your recap of what went on Champions Day. I mean, I mentioned on Monday, Baid being beaten, and in fact, not just Baid, but I Adidar too. What was your thoughts about Saturday morning?
It's kind of like the Mets season, you know, just very disappointing. We went down without a fight. They said he didn't handle the track. The track in that race was slow by 5 seconds. That push-button acceleration just was not there. And he just started spinning his wheels and beating a length in 3/4. It wasn't a disgrace, but just horses that he should beat. I thought Adiar, the second horse, ran fantastic. And I think we'll see him in the Breeders' Cup. Bade Ridge, I'm not sure. So Michael Stout has come over here with the Conduit and won back-to-back runnings of the turf, so he's also possible. But just give credit to the winners. They adapted to the going. I was happy to see Holly Doyle win the distance race with the Trushan. Frankie won 2 back-to-back Group 1s, including Kinross, who won the British Champion Sprint Stakes. And Kinross is owned by a gentleman from Hong Kong. So expect to see Kinross in the Longines Sprint on December 11th. So that'll be nice. They announced a bunch of horses that are nominated for the 4 races in December, including Golden Pal and Campanelli from Wesley Ward. So they're the big international contingent now that the COVID restrictions aren't as severe as they had been the last 2 years. So that should be exciting. But Emily Upjohn gets the job done for John and Thaddy Gosden and Frankie and the Philly and Mare Stakes. She could come over. I'm not sure. And then Bayside Boy winning the QE2, which Bailly won last year, going a mile. And that kind of showed you, Steve, how bad the track was. They won a mile in 1:45. So that gave you a pretty good indication that this track is pretty tiring. So when Bailly got on it, and I don't think it was a matter of tiring. I just think it was a matter of just couldn't get his weight up underneath him and just didn't have that punch that he had in his first 10 starts. So amazingly during the week, not amazingly, but you know, he's just trying to see the stars. And if you had the Tattersall sales on, even when they got to book 2, which was strong as could be, man, the seat of stars are just selling like crazy. So I think Bailly will just go to stud and fit right in. Probably the leading son of seat of stars to hit the stud rank. So it was, you're playing outdoors. The weather could be anything. You know, you could be, years ago, you had football games and muddy conditions. Other times you get a fast field and dramatically affects the game, and that's, you're going to run in Great Britain in the middle of October. That they were worried about running in France the first Sunday in October, which can be pretty soft going, and it was again this year. You're just not going to find any kind of a firm ground. Not that he needs firm ground, but he didn't need that kind of soft ground. So Bailly goes down, he goes to stud. It was also great to see his owner, Shaker Hisser, at the Tattersall sale with Angus Gold buying yearlings. So the fear that when her dad died and what's going to happen to Shadwell and all that, well, it looks like Shadwell's going to continue the same path that they had been when Shake Hamdan was alive. So that was good to see this. See that continuity and that kind of commitment to the sports. So that was last Saturday.
I appreciate it. I was watching from Rochester, and you could just tell that Baid was in dread. And even on the backstretch, Dick, I don't want to say that he was, you know, kind of pinned down and. But it just he didn't ever look. It never looked to me like he was comfortable and you know, just kind of like coiled and waiting to pounce. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's perfect description of all his other races.
Right? Okay.
This race
that
was not not the case. And I like how you blame the sore throat on your grandchildren and not losing your voice screaming for the Eagles against the Cowboys.
It wasn't the screaming. It was having to sing Fly Eagles Fly so often in the first half. I just put up the videos of you know, we taped at Lincoln Financial Field over the last few years. Johnny and Gail, they sang every time. But no, I was quietly taking it all in, and you know, I knew that Dallas would mount something of a, you know, of a response in the second half. But the birds. This is a fairly unfamiliar, for those of us that are Eagle fans of any certain age, this is a very unusual feeling to be, you know, more or less acknowledged, you know, certainly as the NFC's best team right now, but in quite a few quarters they're being feted as the best team in the NFL. Very rare in my Eagle fandom, which... spans 55, 56 years from the time I was old enough to understand what I was looking at.
Well, look at me as a Jets fan. I'm kind of not believing what I'm seeing either.
Well, they're exciting. They're fun. Well, listen, Giants too. Giants have been.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward.
Giants have been
terrific. Just terrific. This coach. That some people were kind of rolling their eyes when they hired him, and he's been he's probably coach of the year right now. Let's get ready here for the Happy Valley Sixth. We're looking for igniting, maybe, or
race six.
Here we go. The 3, the 6, and the 8 to get the pick 3
movement
off.
On the inside with excellent pairs. Now they're right and they're racing. Super Dobbin stood there and missed it by 3 lengths. And there's tremendous pace out wide from Beauty Glory. Igniting Starfire Gems. And also there is excellent pairs. And HZ Torbjörn's burrowed through to beat them all into the first turn. They're in turn followed by Power Kep, who's wider from Storm Trooper. And Decisive 12 on the rail. A length and a half to Dragon Delight. Super Dobbin, Spontaneous, and or Tully Begill. Plenty of pace once again, and Starfire Gems has had to work to find the front on the outside of HZ Torbjörn. They're a length and a half clear on Beauty Glory, who's trapped three deep around Igniting, and on the rail, excellent pairs has just stalked the speed beautifully. Power Kept's four out at the 450. Decisive 12 on the rail, Storm Trooper, Spontaneous, Super Dobbin, and then came Dragon Delight and or Tully Begill. It's HZ Torbjörn in front, shows them a clean pair of heels by 2 lengths on excellent pairs, and then came Beauty Glory. Power Kep out wider, Decisive 12 over on the inside, and or Tully Begill running on out wider, but it's excellent pairs in front, and Chadwick's timed his run to a nicety here for the Longines Cup, and excellent pairs beats a fast finishing or Tully Begill. Might be Decisive 12 third in front of HZ Torbjörn, who knocked up late. They went quick.
Well, favorites too good here, obviously, Dick, and for those that were playing the exacta, Atul Begill, the street boss gelding, 35-1 came flying late to get beat three quarters.
You know, it's funny because I see him coming. I'm like, oh no. And then the track announcer didn't really, you know, he was confident that the favorite was going to win. Now, obviously, he has a great view and watches races all the time, but yeah, the 4 was flying, but the 6 was pretty much already home. And big price on the 4 for David Hull. David Hull had a winner already on the card today as a trainer. So, yeah, 6-4, and at least we're alive, not by much. Times are very fast. They've been running very quick tonight. They upgraded the track to good to firm after race 3, and it certainly is all of that.
There we go, off and running, and got the racing spirit handicap would be next, going a mile. That's in about 25 minutes, and then the speedy closes things out, going three quarters in exactly an hour. So two more, and Dick off to a good start, trying to go 3-1 to hit another pick 4 or pick 3 here at the Valley, where it's happy. Dick, quick recap of the weekend and a look ahead before Alan Foreman joins us.
Well, California Spangle was back in action for the Shot 10 Trophy Handicap. He carried 133 pounds, which most he's ever carried. He did it from post 12, and he won easily, 133.41 in the mile, just dominated. He's ready for Golden 60 whenever they meet, probably in the Longines race, but there's a chance they could meet before that, so we'll have to keep track of that. But he was the star of Saturday's racing at Shot 10. Another good performance was in a Class 4, Stunning Impact. Sylvester D'Souza was the rider and ran a super 7 furlongs. So I thought he was super impressive, and being in Class 4, we'll probably see him move up through the grades and win quite a few races. But California Spangle, as expected, just keeps rolling along. And this Saturday, we're back. Saturday, Sunday, we're back at Shot 10. 10 races all on the turf. Then next Wednesday when we're on, we will be at Shot 10. So no Happy Valley next Wednesday. We're back at Shot 10. I think it's one of those all-weather cards where all 10 races will be run on the dirt track. So that'll be interesting. And then this weekend we have the Premier Bowl Handicap Group 2, 1,200 meters, just pretty much a who's who of the top sprinters in Hong Kong, including Sky Field, who won the Longines race last year, Courier Wonder, Computer Patch, Wellington, all the strong, hard-knocking Group 1 types will be in competition on the handicap condition. So that always makes it interesting. So when they draw the races tomorrow, we'll see where they draw and how much they're carrying and how that's going to affect handicapping this race. Got to look at it as a prep race. So these are good horses, and many of them are looking down the road. So that might open it up for someone who gets in a little bit light and just, you know, figures today's the day, not tomorrow. So that's always an interesting handicap and narrative.
Got one question that Papo Morales just sent a little bit ago, Dick, and Papo's looking at the form to win settings, and he's having a question about the website, finding the track rating.
You mean the track conditions?
Yeah.
You know, like good to farm and stuff. Go back and look at results, and then it's going to automatically pull up today and then go to, you know, the last race that's been run that has a chart, and that'll give you it. There is a way when I log on. Sometimes I get this page that has the track rating, the penetrometer rating, who's suspended for today, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. But I can't always find it as easily as I would like. But the course condition is just go to results and go to any race from today. I would use the last race to make sure you have the updated track conditions.
Okay. All right. Because I pulled up, you know what I did? I went looking, because I've got it in a binder, that terrific DRF supplement that you and Marcus contributed to. And I was looking on there trying to, and you know, it's funny, it's got the, you know, in the grid, in the, you know, lifetime under... which is unusual. I don't know if I've ever noticed it before. It's got results based on the various conditions: good, soft, heavy, synthetic.
Yes.
Which is a nice, yes. You know, which is a little added. You know, that's something. I don't know if there's any room anymore for DRFPs to add anything else, but that is a nice addition to domestic PPs.
Yeah, especially for the more experienced horses that have had many starts, which in Hong Kong you'll get. So, yeah, that's big in Australia. You see that in the Australian PPs, how they've done under the various course conditions, things like that. Then we give you how the horse did first up, second up, distance, how you did at Happy Valley, how you're doing this year, how you're doing in your career. Because sometimes when you look at, for instance, the last race, the 8-horse, Starfire Gems, he had no record in Hong Kong, zero starts. But Lifetime, he had four wins, four starts, a winner, and 2 seconds. So those were in Australia. So you can get a glance of how they've done before they came to Hong Kong, if they have any kind of background internationally. So yeah, there's a lot there. It's actually, for me, it's easier to read for me when I have it on my computer screen than when I have it printed out. It's just really tough on my eyes printed out, but on a computer screen there's different colors and it's just much more vivid.
Should also mention, Dick, because I bookmarked it myself last night, and we'll probably talk about it certainly next week, and as we even into Breeders' Cup week, as the Melbourne Cup approaches. But there was a big upset.
Nature Strip.
Thank you. Upset by that unbeaten Giga Kick in the Everest the other night.
Yeah, 3-year-old. Yeah, he came flying on the outside, which they normally do. And then the Caulfield Cup was run, and the horse just had a, what was his name, Duristan, something like that. He, field of 18, they turned for home, they're all over the track, and this horse just bellied down and won going away. He picks up 2 kilograms, so you get a penalty for winning the Caulfield Cup. So now he has to carry a little bit more weight in the Melbourne Cup, but if I remember, he's only going to go up to 53.5 kilograms, which is, I don't know, 118, 119. It's not a lot of weight, so he'll be one of the choices for the Melbourne Cup. Because the crazy thing with Australia is all the races come at you at once. Cox Plate is coming up,
right?
You know, Caulfield Cup, Everest. And then the Melbourne Cup, and then all the other races at the Victorian Spring Carnival. So, yeah, you don't blink because you're going to miss a lot of racing.
Well, and we'll reach out to our friend Andrew Hawkins. And in fact, you mentioned the Caulfield Cup. I don't know, did you see that Andrew was involved in that horse? He was beside himself. And had to excuse himself actually a little bit. Recuse himself for being so tied on. I was very happy for him. He's
very
involved
good.
With
very good.
Well,
wow.
High Clare, right? High Clare, Australia.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a $5 million purse. So that's also something to smile about.
There you go. Well, we'll get cup. Coverage as we get closer. Deck, thanks for this. Good luck the rest of the way. 8, 10, 11 in the next. And the 2 trying to you know, basically rifle approach the nightcap here at Happy Valley. We'll talk next week.
All right, Steve. Take care.
Dick Powell, everybody. We'll stay here because we've got to quickly get to Alan Foreman. Just have a nice window here to talk to Alan. I want him to more or less walk us through and get his impressions of the HISA advisory group. And also he can speak to the move that'll bring Mary Scalay in as the chief science officer and her KHRC duties, of course, previously, and in terms of experience, she certainly has it. There's some that you wouldn't think that it would be. I want to call it controversial. I'll let Alan handle it. Dr. Scalay has done. Her contributions to the welfare of of thoroughbreds with the creation of the injury database. I mean, that'll be, you know, a legacy that is just not, you know, even without question, has been incredibly important, because it really gave the industry a baseline. Because let's face it, there was nobody, they really were not keeping track. I mean, it hadn't been until fairly recently. Not that it wasn't monitored, but nobody was keeping such close track. So the injury database has really, you know, given the industry a way to which to measure progress. Alan Foreman joins us. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I was just kind of riffing a little bit about Dr. Scalise's, important contribution to this landscape, and as part of this flurry of activity that HISA is involved in, and I knew to reach you was going to be imperative to get a feel for what this group of 19 advisors, how that's going to interact, and your impressions of what we've seen here the last 10 days, 2 weeks.
Sure. First of all, since I didn't hear the discussion of Dr. Scalise, but she's one of my dear friends, and I, Mary was my colleague on the investigation that we conducted of the 21 fatalities at Aqueduct in the winter of 2011 into the spring of 2012, and her body of work, her contribution to the industry goes beyond just the equine injury database. Most, if not all, of the recommendations that we made in the investigative report have been implemented, and they are very much a part of HISA's safety program, what we've done in the Mid-Atlantic, and a lot of that is due to the work that Dr. Scalise has done, and also with RMTC. So I think that her appointment as the chief scientific advisor to HIWU is a really important and really good step for the industry, with an organization that is going to be running the independently running the anti-doping program and enforcement program, and it's important to have somebody with Mary's skill set as their chief advisor. So I think that was a great appointment. With respect to the advisory committee, we have complained since day one that the composition of the standing committees of HISA and the board did not include any horsemen. Just about every other stakeholder constituent group had a seat at the table except for the horsemen, and we've been raising that issue since day one. So there's a real plus, actually, with the creation of this committee. Rather than having one horseman sitting on a standing committee, we've got now 19 very qualified individuals from across the country, across all demographics, who will be advising HISA on issues related to the horsemen, commenting, I would assume, on proposed rules. I mean, we've been doing it through the comment process and working with HISA, but this is going to be a very valuable opportunity to get the horsemen's views and to help educate HISA as it moves forward with the various programs of the impact that many of their rules, regulations, and protocols are going to have on horsemen, and what the concerns of horsemen are that HISA needs to look at and take into consideration. So I'm just pleased that the process has created this committee, and we're going to move forward with it.
And one of the things about the group, it's a varied focusing on the horsemen for a second. There is a nice variety of players involved here, and somebody like Ron Moquette, who has spoken so eloquently on this show with me on a number of occasions, and has voiced plenty of frustration, Alan, with the way a lot of this has been implemented, essentially. So, you know, being open to having somebody like Ron involved is a positive. Having somebody like Kelsey Danner and Tom Drury, that, you know, slightly smaller operations compared to Graham Motion and Mark Cassie, for instance, much larger outfits. Rick Schosberg, of course, just announcing his retirement at the end of the year from active training, but a very strong advocate for and practitioner of the aftercare side of things.
I'm back, Steve.
Thank you, Alan. Tim Keefe. I'm just kind of going through the variety of participants. You know, Tim, who obviously you work with in Maryland and is very up to speed on horsemen's issues. So it's a nice group. Linda Gaudette, who, her whole life in the game. So it feels like a very nice set of horsemen that are strong and independent voices for the most part.
Without question. The 200, more than 250 applicants. I know some people who applied who were not selected, who would have been great for this committee. But, they'll rotate this committee. This is not the individuals appointed here are not there permanently. They will rotate. And there are some very good people who have applied whose expertise would be very useful, who ultimately will serve on this committee. But, as we say, out of the starting gate, this is a really strong group. And I know most of them. I know that HISA took its time looking at every applicant. There are a lot of boxes that they wanted to check off. Having worked with most of the people on this list, I can say it's just a really terrific group, and it's a good way to start.
How do you envision, they're going to meet monthly, according to the press release. To be honest, Alan, their track record thus far is let's call it a mixed bag. There's been plenty of things that they have they've just patently steamrolled, like the jockeys' recommendations and concerns. Other things that they seem to be a little bit more amenable to, to acknowledging missteps. Any thoughts on that?
Well, look, this is, let's not forget here, this is a massive undertaking. They are starting from scratch in shifting the regulation of a business that's been regulated a certain way for 70 years, 80 years, with a whole new paradigm, and they have been by law instructed to take over. It's almost mind-boggling to me what they had to do in the time frame that they've been given. And I know people say, well, why don't we delay this another year? And I don't know that having another year would necessarily make a difference. I just see the way people react, and it's only when it's in their face and about to happen that all of a sudden it gets people's attention and they start to complain or want changes or however it's being done. But the fact of the matter is they don't have a choice. They've been handed this obligation. And they've got to fulfill the time requirements. This is the 19th of October. The anti-doping program and the enforcement program go into effect by law on January 1. And the FTC has not approved those rules yet. So we have not been able to go out into the marketplace to talk to our constituents and educate them on what's going to happen on January 1. Which puts tremendous pressure not only on HISA, but on groups like the THA and others who have to go out and try to ease the transition and protect our horsemen from violations and make them understand and make this program work. And HISA's got to work with racing commissions to get agreements. They're still working on the agreements. It's just a lot between now and the first of the year, and they're meeting the deadlines, and they're doing what they have to do. And unfortunately, every time there is a hiccup or a problem, that's what you read about. You don't read about the good things that are going on or how things are improving. All you hear about are the complaints, the problems, which tend to focus on, well, this is, this HISA is a disaster. It's chaos. however they're describing it. It's, you know, it's a little irritating after a while. I can only tell you from my perspective, not about whether I like Hives or don't like Hives, or whether, you know, people think I supported it, didn't support it, we did, or we didn't, whatever our involvement is, we have an obligation now to make this work, and we are interacting with Hives almost on a daily basis. As we see problems, as we have recommendations, as we have questions, and they have been immediately responsive to us. Do they always get it right? No. Are they always going to get it right? No. But they're doing the best they can. We all are. This is just a monstrous undertaking for the industry. And, you know, I guess maybe a year or two from now, we'll talk about it and look back and be more informed about what was done right, what was done wrong. We're doing the best we can under the circumstances, and it isn't by any stretch perfect. But we're making progress.
Well, we should also include in this, in terms of some at least indication that the mechanics can work smoothly, if not immediately necessarily. But yesterday, the final outcome, I suppose, of the Hot Rod Charlie shoe incident came to a conclusion, and the investigation that involved KHRC and ISA, they said that Hot Rod Charlie was in compliance. He was not wearing shoes that are barred. Here's something that kind of went on for a couple of weeks, but it I think everybody seems satisfied.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of what I was referring to with respect to, in some respects, some media hype, an opportunity to criticize Hisa, an opportunity maybe to criticize the rule. Look, the shoe rule has been a massive headache. the shoe rule, as proposed and implemented by Hisa, was a safety issue. Okay, it was very much promoted as a measure taken to try to reduce breakdowns and injuries to horses. We disagreed with that analysis. We thought that the research said differently with respect to the hind shoes, okay? And we made our case, and we said better to study it with the horses being allowed to have these shoes than without them, and having horses become injured for what we thought might have been a problematic rule. And they listened. And we'll recognize there's an issue with the ability to the availability of the shoes and how we're having to adapt. But I think that both Hisa and the racing commissions are taking a very measured approach to this, understanding the problem. It'll ultimately probably get adjusted again. This committee, this new horsemen's committee, will be helpful. This is the kind of thing that's going to happen. It's going to happen more than once. But in this particular instance, it was investigated and found there was no violation, and the system worked.
Well, and we're still watching and dealing with the strike rule, the 10 strike cap that has resulted in some disqualifications, and then subsequently the hearings that they've produced, that too. I mean, I most closely reported on what Todd Mostoller went through with Dufresne, and that was settled amicably, and to Todd's satisfaction, because they agreed, he agreed with that. They agreed, Mark Guilfoyle and the hearing process agreed that Dufresne had not been hit more than the allotted 10. So that, I suppose that those will dwindle ideally, I guess. That seems to be the HISA position, that the riders will, adjust more and more to the standard. I don't know how else to frame it.
I think that's the case. I think that's precisely the case. It's, you know, once you implement a new rule, there are going to be violators. And when people see violations occurring and the consequences of, of those violations, they change their behavior. I had a call, interestingly, last week from an owner who raced in West Virginia on Classic Day, and his horse was disqualified because the rider hit the horse more than 10 times. And he wasn't sure whether that was the case or not. And I said, well, you got to look at the films very closely to see whether or not he has used the crop in any way for protective purposes, not striking the horse to try to advance its position, but for protection purposes, because those strikes don't count. You know, if he's in tight quarters, if he has to correct the horse, you know, whatever it is, they don't count towards the 10 strikes. But assuming that the rider did hit the horse 10 times, interestingly, without Heisa, the rule in West Virginia, which is the Mid-Atlantic rule, which has been in effect for 2 years, is 6 strikes. Okay, we've had a 6-strike rule in the Mid-Atlantic, and so he would have been in violation without Heisa. So as we talk to owners, as we start to look at this, and we realize that you draw the line somewhere, there are going to be violations, but I'll guarantee you the behavior has changed across the country as a result. And that's what's intended to happen. Unfortunately, some people are going to get penalized, and that's going to happen with the change in the medication rules. I guarantee it. There's some jurisdictions where drug testing isn't up to par with what it is in other jurisdictions. And when the laboratories are testing to Heisa standards, there are going to be violations in jurisdictions where behavior was different. And so, you know, that's what's going to happen going forward. And we'll read a lot about it, but it's going to change behavior. And when everybody settles in, you'll move on to something else.
Well, Alan, I appreciate the Heisa perspectives on these assignments and the addition of the advisory group. One thing you can probably touch on from your RMTC tie, Dr. Hardy, right, is going to take over as the ED.
Yeah, he's a terrific hire. You know, he's been in the regulatory veterinary arena for quite some time. He is highly respected. He's worked with the RMTC Scientific Advisory Committee when we were looking at a replacement that led to Mary Scalay being hired. He was the number two candidate. So he was interested when he heard that Mary was moving on. We reached out to him. I think he will be terrific. The RMTC's role now is going to evolve. It's going to evolve a little differently than what we've been used to, because RMTC was the principal scientific advisor to the industry. That all now shifts to not only Heisa, but the newly created HIWU. And the RMTC is going to become a very important, I think, vendor, let alone a resource for HIWU going forward as they implement their program, because the RMTC has the expertise that HIWU doesn't have and that we can provide, whether it's in accrediting the laboratories and the accreditation program, research, education. Our scientific advisory committee hopefully will become this principal advisory group to HIWU. So I think it's setting up well.
Finally, Alan, let me get, because somebody, last time you were on, they asked for a stadium authority update.
It's troubled and it's complicated. The principal problem right now is the recession. The cost to do the project, the cost for the bonds, interest rates on the bonds has, we all know, it's impacting every sector of the economy. It's impacting this project. The cost to do this project is significantly greater than what was anticipated 3 years ago when we brought the concept plan forward. We have other challenges, the design at Laurel, the work that needs to be done at Laurel, the cost of doing Laurel, and there's a major tax issue related to Laurel with the Stronach Group, Belinda Stronach, and the fact that any improvements that are made to that property, as long as she continues to own it, will be taxed to her at capital gains rates. And the only way around that problem is for her to sell the property to the state, to local government. We're a not-for-profit. And when we brought these problems to the legislature, they instructed that we do various analyses and file reports, which we all did 2 weeks ago. And they set the stage for the way we've got to go forward. We're going to have to go back to the legislature with a plan in January, which is going to require more money and other changes, and we're working through that right now. But, you know, the plan was to break ground at Pimlico after Preakness Day in 2023. The stadium authorities indicated they don't think that that's realistic. We'll see. It's troubling, but some of these circumstances are beyond our control and have been beyond our control.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, between pandemic, the first stumbling block, that is completely understandable, and everything else that comes with it. All right. Well, I appreciate it. I we haven't discussed it in really since Preakness, so I'm glad.
It's a massively difficult and complicated project that has only gotten more difficult because of economic forces that are beyond our control.
Fair enough. All right. But everybody's still pulling in the same direction.
Oh, yeah. That seems very much so.
Right.
We live this every day. We have meetings. The stadium authority is doing its thing. The horsemen are doing their thing. Lots of conversations going on. We've got the Maryland Economic Development Corporation involved. They're appraising the properties. They're looking at options. We're looking at various different options going forward. The Pimlico and Laurel projects are interdependent. They're not separate. And for those who would say, well, we'll just do Pimlico and leave Laurel alone, you can't do that, because when you redo Pimlico, you've got to move horse racing out of Pimlico to Laurel, and Laurel can't accommodate the consolidation right now. So it's, you know, how do we make this all work?
Well, not to turn this into a Leslie Nielsen moment from Airplane, but good luck. We're all counting on you.
You would pick my favorite movie of all time.
It's funny. 2 weeks in a row that this has come up. Airport also came up in passing last week. That's funny. Alan, thanks so much. I appreciate the insight.
Anytime, Steve.
At the Heisen as well. Alan Foreman, everybody.
Okay. Thank you. Stay well.
You too. There it is. And don't call me Shirley. We're going to take, I think, our only break of the morning. Let's do it here. Sid Fernando standing by. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Talk to Sid. I got to give you some of the results that came out of the sale on Monday. Some pricey weanlings. The demand for the weanlings was good. It was very good. It's one of those strange sales where you got, you know, some horses selling for $1,000 and you know, some for $100 and $150. So it's kind of, you get that. So we'll talk that. What else do I have for Sid? Where's my, oh, for goodness sake. There we go. We'll fill in the other blanks, as we always do. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. This we can file away the HISA personnel. All right. And Andy, I just heard from Andy. He's going to join us pretty much in his usual slot. I think he's still in Saratoga, if I'm not mistaken. Seth Merrow in a little bit as well. And, yeah, there you go. It's enough. That should be, yeah, that should, 10:30, 11:30. There it is. All right. So I'll save, we'll save Sean for tomorrow. And perhaps a, let me switch over and see how the, they were getting close to running at, they were getting close to running. I missed it. How the seventh turned out at Sha Tin. They're showing, they're doing their, you know, their replay commentary. So I missed it. I had moved away from the screen. So that's too bad. All right, so we'll just see how this ended up. Hopefully. Hopefully we got Sid's second leg through. Here we go. They're coming. Yeah, the one problem with the camera angle from Sha Tin or from Happy Valley, you know, they give you that head on, and it's tough to know. This was a good race. The mile. You're going to have three horses hit the wire together. Yeah, no good. No good. 5-3-10. 5-3-10-6. That's too bad. All right. 5-3-10-6. Amazing 1 plus 13-1. Jerry Chow, your winner. Huh. And 9-1. Rising from Ashes, second. So some decent prices in that second leg. All right. So be it. All right. And now, now they're official. And, here we go. Official at in the seventh. 2880. Amazing 1 plus. Back after this. Sid Fernando joins us at the races.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves.